hope, healing, well-being. This is what you need to live a happy, fulfilling, and healthy life. Hope, healing, and well-being. This is where you'll learn to reduce stress and anxiety, strengthen your immune system, and become healthier in mind, body, and spirit. Each week, we'll inspire you with stories of people who have not just survived, but thrived, and introduce you to physicians, therapists, holistic practitioners, and best-selling authors who will give you insight into new skills and self-care practices. So join Mary Tracy O'Keefe as she guides us to living each day to the fullest. Now here's Mary.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Hope, Healing, and Well-Being Show. I'm Mary Tracy O'Keefe, and our show is one of the many programs offered at the Well Within Center in Woodbury, Minnesota. It's actually offered on the internet, not at our center, but it's one of our programs. And Well Within is a nonprofit holistic healing center where we offer low-cost and free integrative healing therapy, psychotherapy, spiritual direction, support groups, workshops, retreats, and everything that we do is designed to foster healing of mind, body, and spirit, as well as to promote overall well-being. So if you're in the Twin Cities and would like to come visit us, please check our website, which is wellwithin.org. And we also have created an integrative healing website, becomingwell.org. And also check Gail Cartier's website. It's on the webpage that you're looking at. And that is gailforcewinds.com. So today we've got a really, I think, a very timely topic. We're going to be talking about the dangers of protein deficiency and also of starvation diets. There's a lot of diets out there right now that are promoting fasting or the HCG diet, which is very restricted calories. And sometimes in doing that, we're depriving ourselves of much-needed nutrients, including sometimes protein. And so our guest today is Dr. Ilya Skolnikov, and he is going to tell us more about why it's so important to realize the significance of getting protein into our diet. But let me tell you a little bit about him. Dr. Ilya is a licensed chiropractor, and he is a diplomat of the International Board of Applied Kinesiology. He studies numerous systems of healthcare, such as acupuncture, herbs, homeopathy, naturopathy, nutrition, and others. He's helped type 2 diabetics to reverse their condition, people who had been using thyroid medication or blood pressure medication to be able to get off their medication within just a few visits, because he helps them discover what's caused their thyroid not to work with to begin with. And astonishingly, he has helped a number of people with chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, and high blood pressure to reverse their conditions relatively quickly. His website is triadofhealth.net, and I want to welcome you to our show today, Dr. Ilya. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Wow, thanks for having me. After that introduction, I was kind of confused. Like, who is she talking about?
What's she talking about? Well, I am a big fan of the work that you do. We have some of the things that you have. Well, actually, we have acupuncture. But we really refer out a lot to people that do the sort of work that you do, because of those are holistic therapies. And also, I have seen a chiropractic kinesiologist, which is what you do, myself, and it really helped me to identify food sensitivities. And in doing so, I guess I would be probably one of your success stories if you were nearby. I would have saw you, because I can't believe the difference finding out what resonates with me as far as food, basically real food I should be eating and nothing else, no processed food. But that all came from my visit with the chiropractic kinesiologist. But a lot of people, I'm a big fan. But a lot of people, when I've talked about this, don't quite understand what applied kinesiology is. So before we get into our topic today, can you just tell our listeners a little bit about what that is and how it's used as a diagnostic technique?
Yeah, I can do that. So applied kinesiology is the study of the interrelationships of the body. So normally, when you go to a hospital to get help, most people listening, not everyone, but many people may not realize that it's a completely different type of healthcare than even is what they're being told. So we're being told that we're going to get help at a hospital with our health, but that has nothing to do with what happens there. It's a place for people who have diseases or for people who are very sick to survive, basically. So the medical establishment was kind of founded upon the idea of preventing death, especially out on a battlefield. And it's great for that purpose, but doesn't tend to be so good for chronic diseases. So an applied kinesiologist, we don't really help people with not dying so much as we help people to get healthy. So it's actually healthcare. So we look at how people walk, and we can learn about the different relationships between their muscles and glands and organs and emotional state and the nutrient, you know, their nutritional balance, and we can learn about different types of things that are happening with their body. Because what we found, and it goes back more than 1,000 years to the Eber's papers of Egypt, is that muscles are related to emotions, and they're related to organs and glands, and they're definitely related to bones to which they're attached, and they're related to different points in the hands and different reflex points in the feet and in the body and on the skull, and different teeth are related to different organs and glands. They're related to different acupuncture meridians coming from Chinese acupuncture. There's a whole variety of different acupuncture meridian systems, many of which you never hear about, especially if you're not an acupuncturist.
Yeah.
So anyway, it gets kind of complex. There's something called a chakra system. So the chakra system comes from India. It's relating to 7 different energy centers in the body. There's 7 different energy centers. There's 7 different primary colors. There's 7, you know, there's 7 different notes of a scale. There's all these different interrelationships. Each of these things are related. So the applied kinesiology studies these different relationships in a very scientific, left brain kind of way, really, literally, meaning very analytical, very organized way. And then we're able to understand what's happening with people's bodies. We include Western medicine, and we include podiatry and psychiatry and acupuncture and herbs, and it's an open-ended area of study that includes all the different sciences. So we're not trying to pretend to be superior in any way. Really, we're open to anything that can help a person with their health. And the way that we do it is with a system. So it's applied kinesiology is famous for the muscle testing, which people hear about. Like, oh, is that, you know, people like to ask, oh, is that thing where you pull down on a person's arm? And no, it's not actually, but but we have 650 different muscles in the body. So the applied kinesiologist learns how to test all 650, because many of us are chiropractors. Like, I'm a chiropractor, for example. Mm-hmm. And when you see a chiropractor, you'll get traditionally chiropractors will give a chiropractic adjustment, meaning bones are out of alignment, and they'll realign those bones. They're not dislocated, they're just a little bit out of alignment, so they just need to be slightly realigned. And then they call that a chiropractic adjustment, the realigning of those bones with a therapeutic input. Mm-hmm. With an applied kinesiologist, we want to make sure that the realigning of the bones lasts longer. So we pay attention, so we pay attention to all these different things in the body. For instance, the cranial bones move. The entire medical profession was really convinced that the cranial bones didn't move all the way up until past 1960. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it was William Gardner Sutherland, who first noted cranial bone motion. I mean, this was before 1960, but people kept holding on to the idea that the skull is one big bone, one big solid bone. But, you can see anatomically that there's these sutures. And so applied kinesiologists love to manipulate the cranial sutures when they get stuck together and cause health problems when they're stuck together. So anyway, that's kind of a long answer to your question.
Yeah. No, but it just gives it's fine, because it gives a good overview. And it also shows how there's many ways of diagnosing issues, you know, and that's what I thought was very, very healthy. From your description, it really makes me realize how integrative your practice is. Really, you've got
it's all about integrativeness. Like, I'll refer out to psychologists and colon hydrotherapists and optometrists and medical doctors, and you know, it's not about trying to act like I have the cure for everything. See, when you go to a hospital or a medical doctor, no offense, I'm not saying it's bad, but oftentimes there's a pill for every ill. You're watching TV and you see that you have restless, you know, there's something for restless leg syndrome and you have restless leg syndrome. But Hippocrates, 1,500 years ago, he said, what's causing the problem? You know, the highest good is to find the cause. So, yeah, you can take a pill for restless leg syndrome and it may or may not go away, but why do you have the restless leg syndrome to begin with?
Yeah.
You know, if nobody's figuring out what's causing the problem, how are you going to get rid of it and keep it from coming back?
That's right.
That's why I'm on the radio now, because I love talking about this kind of stuff. You know?
Yeah, no, you can tell. It's obvious. And I know you have a passion about this whole topic regarding protein. And talk to us about why protein is so important, particularly today in the world.
Yeah, let's talk about that, Mary. So, the thing that happened, you can read about it in Western Price. He has a foundation called the Western Price Foundation, goes around the country and kind of does talks. You can get Nutrition and Physical Degeneration. It's available in all the bookstores. And you can get publications that are great, like Protein Power by the Eads. There's another one called, you may not, this one's less popular, but it's called Separating the Wheat from the Chaff. CHAFF by Noelle Thomas, the naturopath. But what we found, basically, what all these books are saying is that it was literally 2.5 million years ago that they found that humans were using these, well, they didn't find it, they found it recently, right? They found that 2.5 million years ago, humans used these stone tools, and these stone tools that we were using were actually to somehow break down meat and then kind of get it to the point where they could, you know, eat them. They were, apparently, it was right around that time that humans were eating really, really huge amounts of meat and fat, and so, or what were then humans. This is a distant relative called Homo erectus.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we've been designed to eat, is mainly fat and meat, and then, you know, a little bit of other things that we've cultivated. But it was only 10,000 or maybe 25,000 years ago that humans started to use agriculture to have convenient foods available that they could quickly eat and get nutrients, you know, a few nutrients out of, and certainly prevent starvation. But these things that we cultivated, most of them, not all of them, most of them had huge amounts of sugar. So, for instance, the Native American Indians would cultivate squash, which, you know, some of it had a low glycemic index, but mainly it's just water, fiber, and sugar, and vitamins and minerals, but not a lot of protein, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm getting at is that the modern diet is not what the Native American Indians did anyway. The modern diet is all about sugar, you know. It's a sugar-based diet. So we see lots of wars and famine and starvation all beginning, you know, after humans survived the last ice age. So that's all been, you know, within the last, you know, 20,000 years or less. So we are, our digestive tracts just aren't designed to digest and break down and utilize and get value from and be healthy with huge, huge amounts of sugar, which is what we now eat, especially in places like China and, you know, vegetarians and people in India. The diabetes rate in India is 50%. So people are excited about, you know, yoga and all these different things. And I am too, actually. And we want to go and visit India, and it's inexpensive. And India, you know, there's all these great things in India. You know, there's incredible computer science and all this kind of thing. But if you look at 50% of the population being diabetic, you know, something's wrong. We have enough problems here in the United States. You know, I think it's about, you know, maybe 1 out of every 8 or even more people are diabetic, and that's bad. But 50%, I mean, that's Isn't that alarming?
Yeah. So what do you attribute to? Because I don't think of the Indian people as being obese, which is, you know, seems to be a big contributing factor here in the U.S. But is that because they're mostly vegetarians, or why is that?
Right. They don't eat a whole lot of meat.
Okay. Not enough protein?
Yeah. So we have a definite known, we see a loss of protein in diabetes mellitus and gastrointestinal obstruction. I'm reading the index of Guyton and Hall's textbook of medical physiology. It's just going to the back of the book. I mean, this is just basic science.
Hmm.
So the kidney diseases like nephrotic syndrome, these are protein deficiency diseases.
Protein deficiencies, okay.
We'll have Americans who, you know, eat some potato chips and sit on the couch and watch TV, and then they start to get unmotivated and doing God knows what. Those are people who are starving themselves. So they don't know that all the food that they're eating is deficient in nutrients because nobody told them.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not really on TV a whole lot. It's mm-hmm. now, if they can listen to this or listen to other radio shows and other things, it's starting to become, you know, people are starting to become more aware of this type of thing. But we're just not designed to be vegetarians. So what we got is we have most of the modern diseases like rheumatoid arthritis, diabetes, mellitus, all these chronic diseases, hypothyroidism, they're all caused by people who don't have enough protein. I have a fellow now who came in to see me with peripheral arterial sclerosis. He came in for a couple visits. I changed around his diet. He wasn't able to walk more than a step or two at the most without having huge amounts of back pain. You know, he was not thinking clearly. He just really has a lot of pain in his right leg especially. And we had him start increasing his protein and drink a little bit more water, or a lot more water. And he's walking around. He's not perfect by any means, but I've just treated him once or twice. And he's eating a lot more protein, but he's never had a whole lot of water or drinking a whole lot of protein. So this is kind of how it works. Protein means of utmost importance. So it comes from the Latin word proteus.
That's interesting, of utmost importance. Well, you know, when you're talking about protein, are you talking about, I mean, there's obviously plant proteins and meat proteins, and vegetarians will say, well, I get plenty of protein from the legumes or whatever, but do you differentiate between the types of protein, or what are people actually talking about when they say I get plenty of protein?
Yeah, I'm glad you're asking me, because otherwise we'd be in trouble. So if you look at protein under a microscope in a lab, they're all relatively, you know, similar, more or less. But we're looking at things that are the difference, you know, we're looking at the same differences between different sources of protein as you do between the night and day or apples and oranges. So it's kind of like imagine yourself going to Las Vegas and gambling with pennies versus gambling with $100 bills.
Mm-hmm.
If you win, you're going to win a whole lot more money if you're using $100 bills.
Yep.
But if you're playing with pennies, you may only win a couple dollars here and there. So when you're trying to get a source of protein from like beans and rice, which has it under the microscope, or if you're trying to get protein out of Brazil nuts or, you know, coconut or something like that, or, you know, basically nuts and seeds and beans and whatnot, you're just putting in pennies into the slot machine and you're getting back at the most maybe a dollar or two. But if you eat beef or fish or lamb or duck or poultry or turkey or you know, whatever, you're ending up putting in $100 bills and you're getting that back. So the protein that is bound, you know, the protein that you get from Brazil nuts and the protein that you get from almonds and that type of thing, it's in a form that you can't really break down and utilize too well. It's excellent for chipmunks and squirrels, but not so good for humans because we don't have an active appendix. Some people listening to this might have heard this before. It's just nothing new, some of the stuff I'm saying. But we don't have an active appendix, so we don't have four stomachs like a, you know, we don't have several stomachs like a cow, which is a ruminant, which is designed to break down and utilize those types of high cellulose foods. So we can't break it down. It's just too much cellulose, too much fiber. So we don't have any, you know, we don't have cellulase enzyme. We don't make it. It's not available to us. We can't do that. But, Mary, you know what we can do is we can have glyconeogenesis.
What
we can have proteolysis. So we can eat protein and we can break it down and we can turn it into sugar and we can store it in the liver. We can use it for energy and we can get 2.5 times more energy from protein than we can from sugar.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is if you eat sugar, like things like, you know, fruit or rice, pasta, potatoes, whatever, corn or alfalfa sprouts or whatever, alfalfa sprouts only have 15%. But if you eat something like that, the amount of energy you get back is, and at least as a, you know, because it's mainly, you know, more or less used as sugar, you're only going to get back the, you know, less than about a fifth or so.
Wow.
So when you're exercising, it actually causes disease, meaning you start to bring up your cortisol levels, your stress hormone, and you start to break down muscle and tissue and protein. You rob your joints of protein and end up causing all kinds of metabolic imbalances and problems if you're burning sugar instead of fat and protein.
Mm-hmm.
So the way that happens is that's just what a lot of people do. People talk about carb loading, and so the, you know, athletes sometimes eat a lot of pasta or something like that the day before they have an athletic event. But really, it's doing the opposite of what they want. If they need quick energy, they can get a half hour of energy out of sugars that they'll burn. But for long-term sustained energy, which kind of is what we need if we're trying to concentrate all day long at a computer or just walking around and doing whatever we do, you know, concentrating on your listeners at a radio show, you're going to need some kind of long-term sustained energy, which is going to come from fat, actually, even better use of fuel than protein. So
people you're
end
saying
up burning
that,
sugar. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, this is really interesting because I think it's kind of putting to the side some of the things that people believe, that like that all proteins are equal. So what I'm wondering is, we've heard about kind of the ones that aren't so great. What are then the best sources of protein? I'm assuming meat, but I'm wondering about other things like whey and things like that. What are the best sources if you were to say you need more protein, but it's got to be this and this and this? What would you say?
Well, the best sources of protein are the ones our ancestors ate. It's all intuitive, but our society's become counterintuitive, so we're backwards. I mean, we got radiation in the air, we got pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, mildicides, insecticides, emulsifiers, stabilizers of food, colorings and additives, heavy metals. We got all this stuff in our water. You know, much of it's in our air. We're exposed to thousands of chemicals a day, so people are confused. So the best sources of protein is what they've always been. Nothing's changed. It's just that people want to be fancy. You know, they want to convince us, because they're a little confused, with all due respect, that maybe, you know, we've evolved, right? So now we can be vegetarians. But you don't evolve in a blink of an eye. What I was getting at with the background of human history is that we've eaten a protein source, which are land and things that fly or walk or swim. We've eaten that for our entire existence on the planet up to the last 10,000 or 12,000 years, which is just a blink of an eye in history.
Yeah.
So the first bone diseases were when the Egyptians started cultivating wheat, and then they started having bone diseases. That's the first recorded instances of bone diseases. Before that, they couldn't find any. So we should eat. The best sources of protein are, you know, for most people. It's different for everyone. That's why I, you know, when I have patients in the office, we check them individually. But they're beef and lamb, and the ones where you can get a good source of minerals.
Mm-hmm.
Like zinc, like oysters, beef, lamb, and all the fish. The only problem with the fish now is that,
mercury.
You know, we have a problem with the fish.
Yeah.
Well, we got all the you know, shark, tuna, and swordfish has mercury. That's not good. Mercury is one of the most deadly chemicals known.
Yeah.
And then we have the Pacific. The entire Pacific Ocean has been irradiated, unfortunately. So it's just a matter of time. That I don't want to be a doomsayer, but maybe for now it's good to have Atlantic fish. It's a great quality protein, the best there is for sure, but it's hard to say what will happen here in the next 7 months or 7 years. So.
Yeah, it's too bad. There's so much to worry about. Well, I want to talk more about this, but before I do, I want to just welcome anybody if you've just joined us. This is the Hope, Healing, and Wellbeing Show. I'm Mary Tracy O'Keefe, and my guest today is Dr. Ilya Skolnikov. How do you pronounce it? Did I pronounce it?
I think that was great. I say Solnikov, but whatever, however you want.
Okay.
I like yours better in a way.
Oh, well, thanks. And today what we're doing is talking about kind of the danger of protein deficiency, and we're going to talk about starvation diets too, but I just want to remind you of his website, which is triadofhealth.next. Before we talk about starvation diets, I want to just talk a little bit more about protein in terms of, is there any danger of getting too much protein, like, you know, for the kidneys or any other parts of our bodies? Can we be eating too much protein? And what if you had protein 3 meals a day? Is that too much or not?
It's the exact opposite of the question you're asking. So the question you're asking, if you don't mind repeating it, if we have 3 meals of protein per day, is that too much protein? And the other question that is combined is, could this be toxic to the kidneys or cause problems with, like, renal disease or that kind of thing?
Yeah.
So, yes, 3 meals per day is too little. So most people are not having enough protein. So most people need 4 or 5 meals per day, and and that's what's causing their health concerns. If you look at the biochemical pathways of the kidney, you can't even, vitamin A is one of the most important nutrients for the kidneys. And it has about, it has a couple of different 100 isomers, all of which, not all of which, almost all of which are derived from protein. So mainly, you know, you're looking at, like, the kidneys themselves are mainly made of vitamin A. So if you were to eat, like, bear kidney or, you know, beef brain, or, you know, these are all protein sources. These are all the best sources of vitamin A. Or, you know, if you have whatever, kidney basically itself, liver is a really great one. But so these are all, that's what allows you to, those are the what nutritional supplements are made out of, right?
Okay.
For people who are not healthy, who need to eat more protein, they just give them the supplements because they're not eating enough protein. Like, so for instance, Standard Process is an old nutrition company. It's the oldest in the United States. And the way they treat protein deficiency and renal disease is by giving vitamin A and giving people protein. So the purine path, the biochemical pathway is called the purine cycle and the pyrimidine cycle. They require amino acids, which are protein, like ornithine, citrulline, and arginine. I mean, these are what's needed for protein, healthy protein, healthy kidney function. So, definitely, it's the exact opposite. It's not having enough protein that can lead to unhealthy kidneys, or not drinking enough water, or drinking the wrong kind of water.
Yeah.
And so there's a huge, huge misconception. There's never, ever, ever, ever been a study to show that excessive protein consumption is hard on the kidneys, because it's not.
Yeah.
People will have a lot of protein and not drink enough water, or they'll have a lot of protein and that's all they eat, and they're not eating any vegetables or anything else, and that may not be the best thing either.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, the thing that allows for proper kidney health is salt and water and calcium and vitamin A and protein and, you know, high-quality fats. So those high-quality fats are bonded to proteins. The best sources are fish and meats. So there's two options. I mean, there's, like, the vitamin A coming from, you know, the land animals, or the vitamin A coming from the little fish, like cod liver oil.
Mm-hmm.
But it's everybody's different, so you can't say everybody needs one or the other. They need whatever they need. But either way, it's an animal. So it's either a fish animal or it's a land animal. So that's those are the best sources. And
so,
beta carotene's great, but, you know.
Yeah. And well, what about getting some of those from fruits and vegetables, like beta carotene from carrots and things like that? What is your recommendation? So if you were to, I think I'm jumping ahead, because it sounds to me like you do some testing. You probably don't give a specific, you give a diet that's specific to what your assessment says a person needs, right?
It's confusing. Healthcare is confusing.
I can't just say what's a good diet for everybody to eat, or, you know.
Right.
Let's say
we're talking about a person with diabetes type 2, and I'm saying it's a protein deficiency syndrome, which it is.
Uh-huh.
What makes it really confusing, healthcare is confusing, because let's say that person goes to somebody like Norman Cousins. I don't know if he still does this, but he did this little study where he took a bunch of diabetics, like, I don't know, 8 or 12 of them or something, and he had them get on this raw fruit, raw vegetable diet, And he reversed all their diabetes within about a month. So then you're listening to this radio show, you're listening to Dr. Ilya, and I seem like some kind of quack because I'm saying they need to eat more protein. But hey, look, if that were true, then why would they reverse diabetes in a month going on his diet, which was basically a vegan diet of raw fruits and vegetables, more or less? I mean, I'm kind of generalizing a little bit, but maybe a few nuts here and there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the reason why it worked is because people with diabetes type 2 are toxic. They're toxed out. And as soon as they get some fresh fruits and vegetables and some real food with enzymes, which are protein that come from vegetables that are living, you know, they're not living, they're actually protein molecules that lower the level, the amount of energy needed to activate a biochemical pathway. So, for instance, if I want to just make stomach acid, an enzyme will help me to do that better than if I don't. But we have all of our own enzymes. So it's confusing. You have to understand a little bit about the way the body works. So a toxic person, if they're detoxified, they get healthier. So a person with diabetes, if the main cause of their diabetes is toxicity, which it often is, if not almost always, all of a sudden they detoxify and they eat regularly and they're at a health retreat where they don't have to work every day and they're there for a month and they're like on vacation and they're able to relax and maybe get a few massages and eat whenever they want, and you know, that they're going to get rid of diabetes, right? But what happens then 6 years later? What happens when they go back to their work environment where there's a bunch of junk food everywhere and they're stressed out and they have to pay their bills and they're not at a retreat and maybe, you know, it's not so easy to eat 6 or 7 times a day, fresh fruits and vegetables. What then? And plus they're organic, they may cost a fair amount of money, and who's going to have time to do all that shopping? Where's the organic health food store nearby?
Yep,
in the Midwest or wherever they came from. So
it
gets confusing. So what I'm saying is for long-term, the generalized answer for long-term health, I don't even know what the question was, but the generalized answer for long-term health for people who, they just want to be healthy, I mean, they're going to need to have a good source of protein because without it, you can't make tryptophan, which allows you to sleep well at night. It requires, tryptophan is a protein. You can't make melatonin without it. You can't make serotonin without it. You can't make the adrenal hormones without it. You can't carry you can't carry thyroid hormone through the blood without without thyroglobulin. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Thytrophin is kind of the name of a protein or a hormone that comes from the thyroid, but thyroglobulin is basically a protein molecule that carries the thyroid hormone through the blood to target tissues. So it's made of protein. The best source of cholesterol is land animals.
Because I think people think that beef, you know, it's got animal fat in it, that causes cholesterol. Is that not right?
That's right. Cholesterol is a good guy. Cholesterol is healthy. It's an antioxidant. That's where you get pregnenolone from, DHEA, progesterone, testosterone, estrogen, cortisol, aldosterone. They're all metabolized from cholesterol. Cholesterol is in nearly every cell of your body. See? So so it's healthy. So if your cholesterol levels go up, those are all the stress and longevity hormones that are needed to fight diseases. When people are starving, their cholesterol levels go up too high. Huh?
You're going there. So you're saying it is possible to get it too high and then you have to bring it down, right? If your cholesterol is too high, isn't that correct or not? I mean, it must be.
Well, the higher a person's cholesterol is as they age, according to the New England Journal of Medicine, actually the Journal of the American Medical Association, all the research shows that they're just healthier. So they have a longer life. They get fewer diseases.
Really? Huh.
Absolutely, because it's the stress and longevity hormone. Not too high. I mean, if it gets really, really high, then maybe something's wrong. But it doesn't really matter. It's not cholesterol is just an indicator of something. It's in every cell membrane of your body, except not really the bones and the hair. I mean, it's in the fleshy membranes of the body. It makes up the lipid membrane. Cholesterol is very. It's like a fatty substance that's very similar to vitamin D. You need it for good health. So how in the world could it cause a problem? That doesn't make any sense. There's just all this misinformation that people are being told.
Really?
And then they go
and
then they go to think, I need to lower my cholesterol. You need to lower your ability to fight disease? Really? Well, why don't you try that and let me know how it works out for you? because I want to know. And well, it doesn't work out. They have all kinds of health problems, and now they're on a medication. They have a disease now that somebody has told them that they have, and they believe whoever told them.
Yeah, I am confused because, you know, you hear there's the good kind of cholesterol and then the bad kind, and the, I don't remember what the lipid the tests are that you do, and one should be, you know, the combined is supposed to be under 200, and I don't even understand what all those readings mean. But so you're saying it doesn't matter? I mean, what if somebody, you know, all these people that are on high, on, you know, Lipitor and things like that because they've been told their cholesterol is too high, is that?
That's right. That's right.
What do you mean, it's right? You mean?
That's right.
Their cholesterol is too high?
Well, if I want to sell medications, if I want to sell statins, which I haven't gotten the latest research, but 6 years ago or 7 years ago, they were the best-selling medication on the market. Mm-hmm. So if I can't help people to change their diet and be healthier and avoid, you know, Coca-Cola and, you know, NutraSweet and Diet Coke and all that kind of thing, then I just give statins. Mm-hmm. Cholesterol, otherwise known as a steroid hormone, helps with stress handling. It helps with the reproduction, you know, reproduction and sex hormones. That's what those hormones I just told you that are metabolized from cholesterol are. It allows you to have energy production, stable blood sugar, body repair and regeneration. It's good for anti-aging. Mm. It helps with healthy brain function, mood, cognition, memory, overall strength and stamina and vitality. You need cholesterol for health. It's, if you lower it, you're lowering your ability to fight disease. You can't make any of the adrenal hormones without cholesterol. You can't blink properly without. Cholesterol is an important component of cell membranes, including the organelles membranes that are inside the cells. The right proportion of phospholipids and fatty acids and cholesterol in cell membranes allows the membrane to be flexible while still holding their shape. Cholesterol is used by the body as a raw material for the healing process. It's that's the reason why the injured areas of the arteries, which are also, you know, you hear about that as atherosclerosis. It's cholesterol, along with several other components like calcium and collagen and the scar tissue that is formed to heal the wound. Hmm. Cholesterol is found in large amounts in the brain tissue, along with choline, which is really similar, where it's needed for normal brain function. So research has shown that cholesterol in eggs is helpful to older people whose memory is declining.
Yeah.
It elevates... Yeah, as part of the protective immune system response in chronic infection and as people get older. So infants need a lot of cholesterol for proper brain development, and it's normally found in large amounts in human breast milk. And so oftentimes the infant formulas contain almost no cholesterol and because of the widespread lack of understanding about cholesterol and its importance. So all the hormones I just talked about are made from cholesterol, which is most of the longevity and stress hormones. Vitamin D, like I mentioned, is made from cholesterol in the skin. Vitamin D helps with immune function. It helps with bone health. It helps with mood. It helps with, I mean, all the research out there showing that vitamin D does almost anything you could possibly imagine. But with, you know,
yeah, we are becoming more and more aware of how important it is to get enough vitamin D here, especially people like us that are up in the Minnesota where we don't get enough outside. But I want to just be sure we get in a little bit about this whole idea of
that source of cholesterol from protein.
Yeah,
land animals mainly, but yeah.
I got that. Okay, but the dangers of starvation diets, I want to at least touch on this before we wrap up here because there's a lot of this out there now, that whole fast diet, the HCG diet, where they're severely restricting calories. Why are those things dangerous when supposedly, you know, these people are saying they're fine? So tell us what the risk is in those kind of diets.
Well, here's the issue. Hippocrates, 1,500 years ago, I don't know why nobody's paying attention to him now, but he said the highest good is to find the cause. What he meant is you need to find out what's causing people's health concerns. So Kent, he said the only real calling of the physician is to heal rapidly and permanently, basically. So if you're just shooting in the dark at a target that's away from you and you have blindfolds on, you're never going to hit the target. So if you just start handing out things and hoping for the best, crossing your fingers to see what happens, then that has nothing to do with healthcare. That's more of like experimentation or let's see what happens. So giving people hormones, see, if you don't have a deficiency in a hormone, why would you take it? If you haven't been to a healthcare provider who's diagnosed you with whatever's causing you to be overweight, why would you try and fix a problem that you don't know what it is? It's kind of like trying to put the pieces of a puzzle together without knowing what the puzzle is of and what the pieces are, and you're blind and you can't see anything. So HCG is toxic. Hormones are toxic. If you start taking toxins, you get sick. You gain more weight. So, yeah, people who take HCG, they lose weight because, you know, if you go to Jenny Craig or which way, you know, whatever you do, if you treat a symptom, it can go away. If you get a gastric bypass surgery, you're going to lose weight. But being obese really a surgical deficiency? Is having obesity a HCG deficiency? Is HCG for a male a good idea when it's a woman's hormone that they make when they're pregnant? People are not thinking clearly. Do you understand? There's a lot of confusion, something called psychological reversal, or psychologists call it resistance, or reverse psychology sometimes. Like people are wanting something, so they're doing something that doesn't make any sense. So my patients who've used the HCG, I don't know about the homeopathic one, but the actual hormone, they lost a bunch of weight, they became really toxic, and toxins are what causes cancer and diabetes and rheumatoid arthritis and all these modern diseases. Mm-hmm. So maybe not a good idea.
What about just the restriction of calories, fasting for a day or two here or there, which is the other kind of diet that's out there right now, this whole fast?
Yeah,
fast
that's
concept.
What this,
forget the supplements or the hormones. Just restricting calories.
So restricting calories is what causes blood sugar imbalances. What causes blood sugar imbalances is what every person who's overweight suffers from. They have imbalanced blood sugar. Their blood sugar is either too high or too low, or it's both. It's going up and down. Bipolar syndrome, manic depressive, ADD, ADHD, cloudy thinking, fuzzy thinking. That's all blood sugar that's imbalanced. So you can come up with any disease name that you want, but what's the cause of that disease? If you restrict calories, then you're starving yourself. That's a starvation diet.
Yeah.
My patients, I take them from one meal a day to five meals a day, increasing their protein and drinking more water. They shed off the pounds like wild, like wildfire. They'll lose 30 pounds in a month if they're over, or a month and a half if they're overweight.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I've done that
by eating more food.
Five meals instead of one. Yeah, if they're eating one or two meals a day, I have them starting to eat properly. Their body starts to work properly. Their metabolism increases. They're able to start to burn fat, and instead of protein, toxins are stored in fat cells. You go on an HCG diet, you lose a bunch of weight because it works, kind of, right? It treats symptoms. You know, if you're depressed and you take an antidepressant, if it's a good antidepressant and it really addresses the symptom, then the symptom goes away. But what now? Where's the counseling sessions with the psychologist or the marriage and family therapist or psychiatrist or whatever? What caused the person to be depressed? Why are they depressed?
Yeah.
Are they suffering from an antidepressant deficiency? The antidepressants we know cause permanent brain damage, all of them. It's scientifically documented.
Wow.
Nobody's ever, contested that. So if you take HCG and you lose weight and the toxins from the HCG, which all hormones are toxic, none of them aren't, you're designed to detoxify your own hormones, but you're not supposed to take them from outside necessarily unless there's a major imbalance, like, you know, after a hysterectomy or having a gallbladder removed or something. So if you end up losing the weight with the HCG and it all works and you use it for 3 months or 6 months or whatever, and those toxins are now stuck in your cells, guess what's going to happen? You're going to end up gaining weight again because you're toxic, and that's where toxins are stored, in fat cells. And now you can't metabolize fat as well because it's toxic, because the gallbladder and liver can't do their job, and that's the problem. So you need to get a diagnosis. You need to know what you're doing. You can't just experiment with your body and walk into a vitamin store and think, hey, what about that? What do you think about that? You know, what do they think about it? Well, they're paid $8 or $10 an hour to think about that. They were trained for a month, and you're going to listen to them. It may not be the best person or thing to, you know, that may not be a good idea. Maybe not.
Yeah.
I mean,
so it seems to me it would be starting with this whole diagnostic thing and do this testing that you do, muscle testing or whatever it is that you do to see what a body really does need, what it doesn't need, and then you.
Right.
kind of adjust their diet accordingly, right?
And yeah, so Voltaire said we put drugs of which we know little into our bodies of which we know less to cure diseases of which we know nothing at all.
Yeah.
So why not just find somebody who can help you, who's trained, who knows what they're doing, who understands the body, and have them help you do something that's... With my patients, I'll do permanent weight loss. I have the 5 secrets to permanent weight loss. I'll do a whole lecture on, you know, the dangers of, you know, unnecessary drugs. I talk to them about some of the, you know, the literature that's out there from the medical profession about, you know, water, you know, for the health, you know, you're not sick, you're thirsty, you know, that kind of thing by E. Batman Gelidji, the Indian fellow. So a lot of, you know, there's a lot of that is understood. You know, Peter Bragan wrote the psychiatrist wrote the book Toxic Psychiatry and Talking Back to Prozac, and I mean, amazing stuff. But if people don't know about it, and you're just watching the stuff on TV, which is, you know, basically manufactured by drug companies to get you to be stuck on a drug for the rest of your life, even if it's inexpensive, like thyroid hormone, and even if you only pay $10 a month, if your quality of life is decreased and you can't think clearly and you're sick all the time and you can't work well at your job, then what kind of quality of life is that? And why not just get the thyroid to work properly? But not many people understand how all that works, so that's, I'm not trying to, it sounds like I'm being negative or I'm putting down something. I'm not really trying to do that. I'm just saying there is a better way, so why not find out about it, you know?
Sure. Well, speaking of that, if people want to do that as we come to a close, well, first I have one last question. You're talking about water. A few times you've mentioned that. Is there a minimum amount of ounces per day that you do recommend that people get enough water so they can kind of flush whatever out and keep things going? Or what do you recommend?
Well, about a quart for every 50 pounds of body weight.
Okay. Quart for every 50 pounds. Okay, great. Well, listeners, if you want to learn more about Dr. Ely and his work, he is located, by the way, in San Rafael, California, if you're out in the California area. But check his website, which is triadofhealth.net. And Dr. Ely, thanks so much for being my guest today. It was fascinating. I learned a lot of all sorts of stuff I didn't know before. So I'm intrigued
thanks.
And want to learn some more. So thank you for being my guest.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
For further information about the Well Within Center, go to wellwithin.org. That's wellwithin.org. You can find Mary's book, Thin Places, Where Faith is Affirmed and Hope Dwells, and information about her inspiring presentations by going to marytracyokeefe.com. You can find both these addresses on the screen in front of you. And if you missed a show, you'll find it in archived shows. Thank you, and we'll see you next week right here for another episode of Hope, Healing, and Well-Being.